Halton here. At MSA, our health and safety drives them to develop advanced safety equipment with performance and protection in perfect balance, like Globe Athletics, the latest innovation in turnout gear. Developed as athletic gear for firefighters, Athletics uses unique stretch fabrics that provide body contoured fit for unprecedented range of motion and flexibility. It's lighter weight, less bulky, and provides the protection you need from your turnout gear. Get the full story at msafire.com/globe.
Thanks for tuning in to Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Each week, our host will introduce you to a various cast of characters you will only find here. Each host will share experience, knowledge, and expertise regarding their years in the fire service, allowing you to call in and speak with them live, an experience you can only find on Fire Engineering Talk Radio. So thanks for joining us. Enjoy and stay safe.
Well, good evening and welcome to another edition of Fire and Training. I'm your host, Douglas Klein, and I'm excited about tonight's show as we're going to talk about rulers. And when I say a ruler, I'm going to talk about how we do performance measuring. Got a great group of folks on the program tonight. First of all, I've got Philip Russell, a good friend of mine here in South Carolina that 34 years into the fire service, spent a number of years, about 20 of those, at the South Carolina State Fire Academy. Been involved in the fire service with that, spent a year as a superintendent of the fire academy. Decided to retire, got a little bored, and went back to be the fire chief in Clinton, South Carolina. Not so much of a little area. It's about 75 square miles going up towards Greenville. Good run of interstate, about 20-some miles of interstate, combination department. A guy that I've had a lot of fun with, messed with, as we've done programs and things together. So it's great to have Philip on the show. Welcome on the show, Chief.
Oh, just an honor to be here, Doug. Thank you very much for this opportunity, and I'm really looking forward to spending the evening with you and your listeners. Looking forward to it a lot.
Well, I look forward to it as well. Also, my esteemed colleague and good friend out of Syracuse, New York, Christopher Nahm, who we've done a bunch of shows here recently together. We'll give a little plug for a series that we did that stretched out over a good period of time, and we talked a lot about some fireground operations and construction features that were associated to commercial structures. We'll plug that in just a little bit. Super excited that you're on the show again, Chris. It's always good to have my colleague and good friend and teaching buddy. I just wish we were out on the roads doing some things. Look forward to hopefully in January when you're down here at the State Chiefs Conference and spending a little time. So welcome on the show, Chris.
Well, thanks, Doug. It's always a pleasure, buddy.
So as most of y'all already know, and if you're a new listener, you'll learn very quickly that Fire and Training is dedicated to the men and women who are out on the streets 24/7, 365, 366 every fourth year, taking care of business, taking care of the folks that are important, our citizens, and responding to those emergencies. And ultimately, the whole premise behind Fire and Training is to focus on making sure that everyone does go home through our efforts and what we're able to share with you. So tonight, like I said, we're going to be talking about a ruler. And most folks think about a ruler when we do that is how we measure something. And that's really what we're going to be talking about tonight is measuring our performance in a lot of different factors. We're going to look at some NFPA standards. We're going to look at some standards that are set forth by credentialing and accreditation. We're also going to talk about some standards that are measured a little bit different from the opposite side of what we are is from our citizens and how they kind of perceive us, talking about some of our operations or thought processes and how we go from there. So how this got started is a little bit of a conversation I was having back and forth with Philip, Chief Russell, and we were, you know, going back and forth having a little conversation. He put pen to paper or keyboard to computer screen and put together a little article he's looking to get out and share with the fire service community. So talk a little bit about your thought process of how you came to needing to look or needing to share this information about our performance and how we measure those things, Chief.
Strictly by accident, Doug. I just happened to be doing some research on a whole other project, and I came across a white paper put out by NFPA. It's the U.S. Fire Department Profile 2018 Supporting Tables. And I printed this off and just started to just go through and look at it and completely got sidetracked on what I was supposed to be working on. There's so much data in what was put together by Ben Everts and Gary Stein. I was just amazed. It's a comprehensive study of every fire department and every fire call in 2018. And as I got to going through this, and again, at 34 years, you think that, oh, well, the fire service hadn't changed that much. Yeah, we have changed a considerable amount since I got in. And while I've always seen that change, I think you just had to look at it and just go, wow, I didn't realize it was that much. We are just not the fire service we were even 10, 20 years ago. Our call types are changing. Our responsibilities are changing. We have become the customer service department of our communities. But we don't have the luxury, if you've ever called customer service and been transferred to other people to get a question answered, we don't have that luxury in the fire service. And so that's how I started down this path, and it was simply asking, I don't like calling the cable provider or the internet provider when I'm having problems. And when they give me the surveys, I always take a moment and say, this was awful. This was no help. Or, yeah, I appreciate so-and-so for helping me. When do we do that with Ms. Smith? How do we even know that we're providing the services that Mr. and Ms. Smith and our communities even want? What do they think we're supposed to do? How much conversation we've had with them? And that's how this started. I just kind of went on and on in the keyboard and came up with what I thought was a fairly decent, at least question for every fire department in our nation.
Well, you know, the question about what does Mrs. Smith or Mr. Smith think, or Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Rodriguez, whomever it may be, I think that's a really big piece that a lot of folks miss. One of the things that is in the Center for Public Safety Excellence in their accreditation of fire departments when you go through that process actually talks about having a strategic planning meeting that needs to be set up. But in that strategic planning meeting, it is community driven. It's people that are stakeholders that drive that strategic planning meeting to help you figure out exactly what you need to be providing, taking a look at that. And Chris, I know you come from the industrial world of late, and you look at in the services that are provided. Talk a little bit about the thought process that goes with that level of service that has to be provided in a different environment that is still related to the fire service, because that's a lot of what you did was the fire rescue and safety components in a nuclear power plant.
Well, regardless of what business line it might be, I mean, when you are in a business or in a system or in a process where you have to deliver a service, as Phil mentioned. Again, there's so many different elements to it, but at the end of the day, what you're trying to do is identify what those key elements are, and those fall under what's called key performance indicators, or KPIs. And those are, as what you just mentioned, Doug, you know, and again, what the Center for Public Safety Excellence has identified from the business realm or area, is really just developing a strategic plan that identifies what's important to you, what's important to your customers, what's important to the next rings or series of those that you serve, whether it be a customer, whether it be an end user, a supplier. So there's a lot of moving parts, but when we pull it all back and put it into the fire service realm, it's pretty simple, you know. And we've always had those performance indicators in a very simplified world, as Phil mentioned. Back in the day, for many of us, back in the day, it was pretty simple. How many fires did we respond to? What were our losses? How many saves did we have? I mean, and then once we got into some of the more varied areas of customer service and activities, now we started looking at other different metrics, which, again, was a natural fallout from it. I don't think it was clearly identifiable until the late Chief Brunicini started talking about customer service in the setting of the fire service that started connecting the dots. And then, you know, back in the mid to late 80s, we saw some continuity. In other words, we saw the fire service sort of getting it a little bit, but I think we've seen some tremendous gaps and just straying away from it, staying away from that business side of it. And some very good fire chiefs and administrators, chief executive officers that are out there, again, many of those that are seeking accreditation clearly understand the importance of performance and performance indicators and metrics and measures that that we're talking about here tonight. But I think for the majority of the fire service, it falls on either deaf ears or it just falls on those that just aren't familiar with it. They've never been appraised of what those indicators can be, what they should be, how they need to be managed, even some things that we call the balanced scorecard and having a dashboard. I mean, those are some things that we'll talk about here tonight, but they clearly revolve around a very simple process, and that's developing a strategic plan, identifying some goals and objectives as they relate to what it is that you are providing. And for us, it's all about a lot of different things. As Phil just mentioned, you know, it's about so many different moving parts. But again, the other part of it is what's quantifiable, what's the priority, what's important to the organization. And then, Doug, as you mentioned, what's important to the community. And that's where, again, the Center for Public Safety Excellence really looks at tying not only what we're doing, but what it is that the public wants us to do, either clearly or something that might be perceived.
And, you know, that is dead on target. And, you know, I threw out the Center for Public Safety Excellence, but it also comes down to some of the same things in ISO. And we've all been in chief's role and been responsible for ISO ratings, which, you know, impacts our community. But in that study that Philip referenced out of the NFPA in 2018, they talked about 64% of the fire service calls were emergency medical related responses, and I kind of chuckled when I looked at that as a number because it is pretty much dead on to what we're doing here in Horry County, and as I go and travel and see other organizations, it's about the same number, and then it's followed by, you know, somewhere around 17-18% of calls supporting our public with smoke scares, lockouts, other responses. Now, we actually have probably a little higher number of structural responses than a lot of departments do. We do run a number of working, you know, structural fire incidents. But, you know, I was looking at something. I actually, in my office, got up and walked over to look at the Community Risk Assessment Standard of Governance. And looking at performance indicators, and you know, one of the things that when I looked at one of the performance indicators, it jumped back to like the 14-10 drills of, you know, how fast can you do something, what's your competency in responding, and the agency, you know, when you look at us as an agency, we have to look at it like our response times. You know, one of the things that we're actually utilizing now for a measurement for EMS is the amount of utilization time, ambulance utilization time that we've got going. It's not how many calls they're running, but it's how many minutes or how many hours, you know, the unit's tied up, and also identifying how many times that the unit is out of the jurisdiction of the second unit or a third unit is having to go into that jurisdiction. We're doing the same thing for fire responses, for justification of stations, things like that. So we're looking at that, and I know part of what Philip was going down the road with in his article that he's working on here that he shared with me is that most of our departments do not have the ability to provide, quote-unquote, specialized services. And when I say specialized services, that's where you're running true truck companies or true rescue companies or, say, a true hazmat team within your groups of people. What we're finding, and a lot of what he even indicates in here and what the research says, is that we're, for the most part, probably only about 10% of the fire service agencies are capable of truly doing that, while others are being jacks of all trades. So Philip, you want to talk a little bit about that concept and what you're seeing and finding with it?
Well, and when you look at the data, 18% of our fire service, by the report now, covers 68% of the population. We only have 3.4 career firefighters per 1,000 in population, and you turn around and you add the volunteers to that, we're at a total of just over 6 firefighters per 1,000 in population. They just don't have the numbers. I would love to have the numbers to have a dedicated truck company and 2 dedicated engine companies and a rescue company. That's not going to happen in rural South Carolina. Pine trees don't pay taxes. And so when you begin to look at the report and play it out, what we have is the argument that I hear, and I hear it a lot from my guys, we just need to run a truck. That's all we need to do. We just need to have a true truck company. It's like, guys, that's not going to happen here. We have a truck company, and the same people we have an engine company, and the same people we have medical responders. Bottom line is, in my vernacular, every one of us, whether we're on a truck or whether we're on an engine, is completed in training up to firefighter 2, or at least we should have. And so those skills ought to be resident in every employee. And it goes back to, how much are we training on all of our skills and creating the muscle memory? Because we've got to make decisions at every call we go to, and we've got to have the frequency and training and the recall of that training to be able to have muscle memory to perform the skills, regardless of what that assignment is. Miss Smith, I mean, well, you go back to the YouTube video of the fire SUV. Hey, there's a fire. Put water on it. That sounds great. But in theory, when we get there, Miss Smith really don't care whose name's on the side of the door, Miss Rivera, whoever that may be. What she cares is we come off of that truck prepared, ready to go, and we can provide the skills that make things better.
Well, Chris, you know, we've had some conversation, especially when we've been teaching out on the road. Part of the conversation comes down to fire ground command or fire ground operations or the challenges of today's demanding fire ground. Take what we're talking about here and wrap it into that context for us.
Well, I think for maybe the majority of our listeners, it really even distills down to something even simpler. And Philip just talked about it. You know, we talk about wearing multiple hats or having multiple functioning positions within the typical organizations where you don't have dedicated services or dedicated resources or the limitations of resources. Number one, you have limited resources, you have limited capabilities, but you have to provide a variety of those capabilities for the given situation. So I think ultimately it just boils down to some simplicity of just looking at process of those resources, and it really relates back to when we talk about performance, what are the proficiencies and what are the efficiencies? In other words, as Philip indicated,
yeah,
you know, you've got a small resource group of personnel, multifunctional, so they're working in a simple world, engine and truck company potential functions. Now they have to maintain. Now they have to attain that proficiency, maintain that proficiency, and what we are suggesting when we talk about performance measures and so forth is what is the effectiveness of that. And that effectiveness now comes out of what we, the leadership of the organization, what do we value? What is it that we value regarding that? Is it X, Y, Z? And it can be anything from showing up quickly, throwing a ladder, or stretching that line, or getting first water. I mean, it's in a variety of different elements that now gets into other functional areas that are driven by two predominant location or two predominant domains, and that's NFPA first and foremost, and then secondly ISO, which have, again, there's values out of those measurements. You know, how far is the station? How far does it take you to get to a scene in terms of quantifiable time? And then all the other things draw out of it. So when we talk about today's fire ground, I think it goes back to what you were asking the question on, Doug, is that yesterday's fire ground, and that yesterday fire ground may be literally yesterday, or really in the bigger context, it's quite a bit of time ago. Normally, when we relate back to things that are demarcated from the late 90s to the 2000s, things that we used to do back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s certainly are much different than they are today. And today's dynamic fire ground requires, really demands of us to have higher levels of proficiencies and efficiencies to be able to operate in this environment that really just doesn't give us the margin of error, doesn't give us the latitude to make mistakes, which now requires us to have, again, it just drives it back, just as Philip just talked about, it just drives it back to metrics of performance in a very wide degree of areas that becomes our scorecards, that becomes our dashboards, and becomes part of what we are talking about here tonight. But everything we're doing today and everything that UL is identifying and everything that we are seeing, without the value of research and development, this is just the stuff that the guys that are listening are seeing within their jurisdictions, the kinds of fires, the kinds of situations that we respond to. They're just screaming at us to come up with even some basic fundamental metrics to make measurements, to identify gaps, identify improvements, to make us better so that we are safer. And then guess what? If we are better and safer, although there's somewhat of a separation there, we can provide a better service to the public that is expecting us to be the absolute best.
So continue on, Philip, with some of your thoughts about what we're talking about here as far as the measurement and what's your philosophy about how we create a good ruler for this, a measurement tool?
And I think Chris actually just hit on that. It's difficult, but I think the first thing we've got to do is entertain those stakeholders, those people that we serve. We've got to ask them what's their expectation. And one of the easy ways to do that is someone is going out for a community block grant. These are nationwide grants. There's a survey required of that. And, yeah, they build fire departments and they grant fire trucks. This is a perfect opportunity to utilize our audience, get their input on what their expectations are. And I think what we'll find is it's a win-win and a learning opportunity for everybody, because we're going to have an epiphany from our customer that we didn't recognize this was their expectation. At the same time, really, some of our audience, they just think we show up when something's on fire. I can't tell you how many medical calls I've been to where somebody goes, hey, I didn't call the fire department, I called EMS. Well, this is what we do. And I think we've got to entertain our stakeholders, and we can't expect to send a survey by mail and get anything back. That's not going to happen. What we've got to do is reach out. Some of the best resources that I have, I found, have been our ministers throughout the community. Get them involved. Get them to ask questions of their parishioners. Get us in front of your parishioners. And I kind of combine that with our community risk mission that we have of getting out in homes and making sure we've got the sufficient number of operating smoke alarms in every residence. getting out with these customers and talk to them and having those conversations with them while we're there one-on-one, or going to the church and doing our FireSafe presentations that we do. But the bottom line is that we've got to have their feedback. If nothing else, it provides us additional contact and information to make decisions off of. It's easy to look at this report and see where, you know, we only ran a little bit more than 3.5% of actual fire calls in the year 2018. It's easy to look at that report and see that and realize that was only 1.3 million fire calls. But you got to also go and correlate that our civilian deaths went up over the – since 2009, our civilian deaths have gone up to 20.5%. Why is that? Where's the gap? Now, look, Chris and Doug, y'all know we have talked a lot together in the past, and Chris can take us down the construction path and let us know real quick why we are seeing some of the increased death rates and the way our structures are built, the fire loading that's in it, the science that goes along with that. But the statistics isn't real until it hits at home, until it hits at your fire station or in your district. And what we've got to be able to do, even if we don't have a formal set of nationwide statistics, or I say statistics, of standards, we at least have to have some internal guidance within each department that says, what are our successes and what are our needs of improvement? You know, at the end of the day, our citizens are our ultimate ruler. They're the difference where we're going to get that new fire truck or we're going to get that new station. So what are we doing that causes them a sense of safety and a sense of ownership of what we're doing for them?
Yeah, let me just interject here, because, Philip, you just put some very key elements right on the front table there, because, again, it's about those stakeholders that are external, and then there's also the internal ones. But, you know, you as a fire chief, the fire chief has to establish what the expectations are of his people or her people, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
What does a fire chief expect as the chief executive officer of that business, of that organization? And then you get some of that feedback internally in terms of what is it that your personnel, though, those resources that you're going to expect to perform or do some things, because it is such a complex working mechanism that has so many different working parts, that external, internal, and so forth, but it clearly relies on utilizing the vastness of the capabilities of your system. And I love your comments of just reaching out to parishioners, reaching out to whatever the entities are to help communicate. And that is so important when you talk about PIs and so forth. It's all about having such an effective 360 level, vertically and then horizontally, of communications, both within the organization and then, more importantly, Doug, I think, as all three of us are saying, the external part. So some great, great points, Philip, just that really hit upon everything.
Thank you, Chris.
I think y'all are really knocking this out of the park when we talk about it. And one of the things I want to do is we're about halfway through our typical show time, but I do want to invite listeners out there, if you want to join into our conversation, please feel free to do so. We're live currently. And if you want to call in, that guest call in is 760-454-8852. That's 760-454-8852, and once you get in, you just press 1, and that puts you in the host queue, and we'll get you on to have some dynamic conversation and dialogue with the panel tonight. But with that said, let's take us a short break, and we'll be back right after this.
TheFireOfficer.com is highly regarded and recognized as the premier e-media site for information and insights for leadership, knowledge, and training for today's fire service. Focusing on the emerging and practicing fire officer and field commander, thefireofficer.com is dedicated to providing in-depth insights on leadership, operation, the modern fireground, and professional development with over 22 additional fields of dedicated e-media support. Thefireofficer.com, a buildingsonfire.com series now on Penwell's Fire EMS blog, a part of the fireengineering.com, Firefighter Nation, and Fire Rescue Magazine e-media services. Looking for timely information and insights to support today's fire service demands? Firegroundleadership.com provides outstanding e-media offerings across a broad range of topics that include lessons from the fireground, building construction and fire dynamics, adaptive fireground management, tactical discipline, and much more. Firegroundleadership.com, operational excellence on today's evolving fireground. A buildingsonfire.com series, now on Penwell's Fire EMS blog, a part of the fireengineering.com, Firefighter Nation, Fire Rescue Magazine, e-media services.
Well, welcome back to Fire and Training. I'm your host, Douglas Klein. Joining us tonight is Chief Philip Russell from Clinton, South Carolina, and my esteemed colleague, Chief Christopher Nam, from Syracuse, New York, and part of the Command Institute in Washington, D.C. We're talking about some measurements of performance standards, a.k.a. how do we measure that? What is our tool that we measure that with? And we've talked about several things in the show so far, to include ISO and accreditation from the Center of Public Safety Excellence. We've looked at NFPA standards for those. We've looked at what the public and our stakeholders are demanding. So let's really start diving down into a couple of these so people understand exactly what we're talking about and how they can go about utilizing these. And that's probably one of the better tools for our folks on the streets, is how do they utilize this information to make themselves better or more effective in how they provide service to the citizens that we have and doing the things that we do based upon the percentage. So I'm going to kick it off with, we said that 64% of our call volume were medical responses. So in the Center for Public Safety Excellence, this is how you start getting benchmark standards or performance indicators, those type of things, so people understand exactly what we're talking about, is that it has a piece in here that says, or ask about the agency and the standard for providing basic life support within 5 minutes, 90% of the time. And there's the quantifiable, you know, can you do it 90% of the time? So you made the comment, Philip, you get a lot of times, I called for EMS. I didn't call for the fire department. I think one of the things that is education about that, but also are we looking at what standard are we holding to? What is the goal that's set? So I will tell you that we try very hard, and that five-minute response time is really tied to some of the old ISO-type standards of where, you know, the first engine arriving within 5 minutes. It's still tied to some of those standards in response times now, but it's also yes. tied to the EMS world of getting there. And we all know that, and it even mentions in the criterion, and that's actually in chapter four of the self-assessment manual about being able to include defibrillation within that 90% of the time. So that is a pretty strong benchmark that we look at. And, of course, ALS, it says 8 minutes. So the big thing I'm going to throw out to both of you guys now is how data-driven are we in measuring what we do for our public? So, Philip, you're engaged heavily because you're currently in a fire chief's role and you know, making a lot of strides with an organization in the state of South Carolina here. So talk about some of that with me and the listeners.
Well,
Well, how data-driven? To the point, sometimes I think we're too data-driven, because what we do is we put the data out there, but what does it tell my council? What does it tell my city manager? What does it tell the citizen that lives four blocks down from the fire department? Look, we can understand NFPA 1710 and 1720 based on what demographics is listening to this this cast right now. The fire service knows those. We've become embedded to those. When I would say we can come out and we can use the statistics that if I'm going to meet 1720, that I can put the minimum number of firefighters on that scene within 8 minutes without a problem, and I can do it 90% of the time. As a matter of fact, if I'm in the city, we typically have a response turnout within 3 to 4 minutes on average. That's an average. What's my medium? What's my maximum? And that's what I get lost in that data when I start looking at, okay, well, what are these times that I went over? Why did I go over? Let's go find the causation. Let's see if we can find the pattern. We need the data. We have more data now than we've ever had before through the use of all the different databases that are out there for the fire service to use. And I'm not going to use a name, but y'all know the people that are out there using the softwares and the different softwares available to us. I think we use this data to our benefit to our audience, but how much do we really absorb it ourselves and find our efficiencies and our effectiveness, but also find our inefficiencies? You know, that's a fine line, efficiency and effectiveness, and trying to gain both. And Chris, I know you do that in a nuclear world every day, so why don't you pick it up and run with it?
Well, Philip, you're exactly right, because the data is there, but we're either afraid to use it, or sometimes we know what the data is telling us, but we're afraid to publicize or lift that leaf up because we know what it's going to tell us. You know, there's weaknesses, there's gaps, there's inefficiencies. And then suddenly, especially at the executive levels, you know, we can look very bad or very good depending upon how we manipulate that data, what we choose to present, what we choose to ignore. So that's when you have very good balanced scorecards, when you have a good dashboard of your indicators. And those indicators can be leading or lagging indicators. And the lagging indicators are what we normally utilize because they're the most easiest to identify by data. They normally tell a story that doesn't take much to say, well, or no, it gives us much more wiggle room to be able to explain it positively or negatively. And a lagging indicator would be just in terms of numbers of fires and fire losses. But as Philip just talked about, you know, it doesn't get into what those thresholds are, what the performance and what the metrics are, you know, what is good, what is bad, what does that really mean? And when we don't have enough of quantitative, qualitative, transparent indicators, and we game the system, we can have all of this data and we can manipulate and utilize it to our advantage, or utilize it to help support what it is that we're trying to either have an excuse for or what we're trying to promote, you know, from that standpoint. So, you know, it's very, very important, I think, that you have both resource-based metrics, which are people-oriented, because we're in a business for people, both people on the external side for the stakeholders and our people-driven metrics that are all based upon the personnel that we're putting on those companies that are going out in the streets, whether it be fire, whether it be EMS, whether it be service-related. It's all about our people. So it's the process that's driven out of all of our standards that we can pick and choose what we want to do. Again, they're going to be organizationally driven, because I'm going to have different standards if I'm coming out of a metro size or urban department. If I'm coming out of Columbia or Horry County, it may be different than a small little department that only has one station that's volunteer-based and it's running a handful of calls. But the importance of having metrics is just as important for them, because you've got to be able to develop that goal setting, Tyrion, that you want to identify, develop the benchmarks, identify what the best practices are, and then crawl, walk, eventually run, and then be able to sprint in that marathon. And you develop the performance indicators for more rigorous levels of insights that are driven by the data that you have to start developing and cultivating and capturing. But then also, I'll just, and my last comment on this is that you've got to be able to understand what that data means, and that goes back to the binning of it, you know, identifying and categorizing it into these scorecard areas based upon whatever it is that you're trying to do. And there's a lot of good successes out there. I think that I look back, I think probably about 20 years ago was with the time frame that, especially up at the National Fire Academy, I actually was a student participating in one of the executive programs there, and the one class we actually had to talk about some of these different attributes, and I actually chose to talk about performance indicators in this balanced scorecard. And at that time, there was only a handful of organizations, especially the larger organizations on the metro side, that really were had cutting what we call cutting edge PIs. And everybody else was just like, just as we're talking about here tonight, was like, oh my gosh, never even recognized this, never realized it, because the bosses at the time just never were told about how they can be implemented or imported from corporate, the business side of the industries, and how we, the Fire Service, can really utilize these things to a great benefit. So, it's just a lot of moving parts, but you've got to be able to differentiate. So the other thing is, as Philip talked about, you've got to be able to differentiate what it is I'm looking at. These numbers are there in a raw stamp. Take those numbers, put them into the context of what those categories and those bins might be, and then have thresholds based upon elevating levels of importance. You know, what is important about this particular series of data and numbers? What are the thresholds that I need to act upon? Not to the point where I'm doing something bad, but as I'm incrementally getting to either a level of good or to a level of bad, the positive or the negative elements of those PIs, you have to have actions in place that react to them. So you want to be proactive and identify, hey, we're going down this path. We've got an increased level of let's say, response times. It's a simple little category. We're seeing with a threshold of a target or a goal of, let's say, a 6 or 8 minute response time based upon our jurisdictions and the characteristics and the physical layout and so forth. So whatever that appropriateness is based upon a standard, based upon the community, based upon your composition, you create that goal. Now you're monitoring that, and again, where's the threshold? Well, let's just for argument's sake say the threshold of having the optimum time based upon a certain percentage is 8 minutes. Well, you know, I'm seeing a percentage over the course of the last 3 months, or the quarter, or the last couple of weeks, or the last 24 hours, whatever it may be, based on your frequency. If you're seeing a decline, you need to figure out what the corrective actions may be to identify why it is that. Is that because of weather conditions? Is it because of apparatus that's downtime and I'm using an older piece of apparatus? Is it the volunteers aren't getting to the stations quick enough? Is there deficiencies in my paging system? So it's all a matter of your systems and what it is that you're looking at, and then those thresholds based upon those numbers, and then being honest. I mean, you've got to be honest with yourself, but I think the other key takeaway that Philip was talking about here is that you've got to have a core group that understands what it is that we're looking at. You have to have accountability with the chief. The chief has to hold those that are reviewing those numbers at a high degree of accountability to review them, act upon them, provide recommendations. Unless you're the only guy doing it, then it's all upon your shoulders, and now it becomes even more challenging to stay in the weeds and get above the weeds, but go back into the weeds to look at these things and then be able to see the forest from the trees sometimes.
I really believe that we're hitting on something that I want to expand upon just a little bit, is getting folks to look at a large amount of data and be able to, and you use the term bins, be able to categorize it or place it in bins to be able to use it for various things. A good example is response times. And let's say you're looking at trying to reduce an ISO 10 area.
and you look at response times. Well, first of all, you know, it takes money to put fire apparatus and people and stations in areas to be able to reduce an ISO 10. So you also have to begin looking at how many parcels are in that ISO 10, what's the geographic size of that area, what is the number of homes or civilians, what is the property value, what's the tax intake. So that's just one component of that. And also, what is your responses into that area? How many times are you going to that area? I know that we have some ISO 10 areas in Horry County, but a lot of what we look at is those areas, and we did the study on this, is those areas are swamplands. And there's really, you know, not a lot there. There were some areas that we looked at that were significantly large and only had 25 homes in that whole area, but the majority of it was just, like Philip said, pine trees or swampland that just, you know, what are you protecting there? You can't justify that for it. The other side of the fence is we take data and say, okay, it's taken us, you know, 10 or 12 minutes to get in there, so we need another station to this particular area. Well, in reality, do you need another station, or maybe do you need a connecting road? It could be that your infrastructure is more valuable to you to create an infrastructure of roadways or whatever versus having another fire station. Maybe it's more cost effective. It provides, you know, exactly what you're looking for. So you've got to look at everything with what I call the window to the wider world view. And part of what we sometimes try to do is we try to manipulate the data. We go on, you know, people are going to die, you know, all this type of stuff unless we do this. And in today's world, that's just not going to cut it when you're out there on the street. So why am I talking about this, and how does this affect the street-level people? Well, part of what I want folks to take away from here that are street-level people is when we're asking for proficiency from, say, a training division or a professional development division that says you're capable of doing things in a certain period of time. You're capable of, like, getting dressed and on the truck. You're out the door in, you know, 60 seconds. You're meeting some benchmarks that we're looking for. But when you get on the fire ground, how long does it take you to get, you know, a water supply established? How long does it take you to get hose lines stretched? How long does it take you to get ladders in appropriate position? A lot of that comes down to, as we talked about, the effectiveness of the people through their efficiencies. So that comes back to a training aspect that impacts a lot of these, you know, capabilities. Another one would be, and this is very, very simple, is you've got an EMS unit that transports to the hospital. How long or how often do people drag their feet, you know, so that they're not back out on the streets running another call? Well, that happens frequently in the EMS world across the United States. It's not just one locale. It's everywhere. But when you do that, part of what you do is compromise or skew data for the fact that you're not available to run in your first due district because you were, you know, not hustling to get back in service. Now, I don't believe in cutting patient care. I understand the documentation and paperwork has to be done, but I also know a lot of times we're not diligent on, you know, getting back in service as fast as what we could. In today's environment, I understand there's a couple of more influencing factors. A good example is a lot of EMS agencies are now taking their units down, you know, for a brief period of time so that they can do additional decon and spraying and things like that. Because of the, you know, the pandemic we're in and the situation we're in, trying to keep responders safe and other patrons that we're actually, you know, providing care to safe as well. So those are the some of the concepts that I want our firefighters to understand the importance behind what the data is driven. And, you know, another piece that I'm going to challenge our officers that are listening and our chief officers that are listening. There's a lot of ways to do business, and don't try to keep it the same way. Be willing to expand out your deployment models in a different capacity. And that's something that a lot of people have a hard time with, but can you deploy in a better mannerism to be able to accomplish your goals and objectives? And, you know, I'll just use one that we did is to make sure that we're trying to get ALS coverage in an 8-minute time period. And that's getting ALS coverage to the scene. And you can put a paramedic on an engine and be able to provide that care very quickly. Again, just like for us, we looked at some of our data, and a lot of our calls were BLS actual transports. There was no ALS interventions. So part of what we did was change the deployment model where we have paramedics on the engines and EMTs on the ambulance, that the paramedic can automatically just step over onto that ambulance, and it's an ALS ambulance. And, you know, you can swap personnel around very quickly and be able to have, you know, your fire apparatus back in service, or, you know, depending on how you lay out your staffing matrix. So there's a lot of different ways to look at some of these things that we're talking about of, you know, our responses and what Mrs. Smith is actually looking for. I think Philip hit something when he said, we're not going to send them a survey in the mail because you're probably not going to get anything back. And, you know, years past, you could probably do that. You know, part of what we have to do is get those stakeholders involved, get the community involved, and actually allow them to have a say-so. So with all that being said, I'm sure that has spawned some thoughts in your mind. So, Philip, I'm going to go to you first.
Well, the first thing I've got, you were talking about the swampland and maybe getting a road. I think we also need to, in some of our smaller organizations, remember we're not a fiefdom. Everybody in our area deserves the same competent level of fire protection. And that means we've got to work well with others. We are no longer the fire service we were 30 years ago where we could do it all internal ourselves. The statistics in the report shows only 6% of firefighters per 1,000 persons. That's not a lot of firefighters. We've got to work well with others. If I'm going to rotate this over to street level, I'll start off with our captains. Captains, make your people responsible for what they need to know or what they should know. Make them responsible for being able to do their job. That company officer, literally, if you take a look at him as the incident commander, is probably no different than the drum major of a band. Now, everybody that's in that band, that drum major may have to teach them how to march, but it was a prerequisite of each band member to be able to play their instrument and play it well. Now, that's the challenge that I issue to every firefighter. You know the position you're in, whether it's firefighter, whether it's driver engineer, whether it's captain, lieutenant, whatever that function is. You're responsible for knowing your job. You're responsible. Not that your ship has to do remedial training with you every day. No, that's not the way it should be. You take personal responsibility to make yourself better every opportunity you get. Because when that tone drops and you get on that rig and you get to that scene, you've got to be able to perform. Mr. and Mrs. Smith expect, they demand that you make their situation better. So we've got to train with muscle memory. And I will turn this note to, as the example of military personnel training to clear houses. They don't clear a house once or twice and say, yeah, we got this skill down pat, we're done. No, they do it over and over and over again. It might be 8 hours, it might be 40 hours, but that same crew continuously trains on clearing houses. So I challenge you, how many times are you going to pull hose off of a truck? How many times are you going to do it before you say, we have mastered it, we found better efficiencies in pulling it, we can get water to the fire quicker now. How many times do we do that? In honest, you know, I know how firefighters work. Shoot, I was one. We pulled it off a couple of times and said, no, we got this. And that's the mentality that I think that we're going to have to get out of, because in small rural America, no different than, I don't think the report actually says, even in metro cities, we don't have enough people that we can specialize. We've all got to know our job.
Chris, your thoughts?
Again, I think that, Philip provides a great framework for what it is that for the value and the need for performance measures and indicators. So, again, the whole premise of this discussion here on this episode revolves around, again, Philip's, you know, I think your reawakening and an increased awareness of what this focus area can do. And, I felt that level of excitement when you first started talking about it. Even the fact that we are talking about it here on a national level here on this particular show shows the importance. And, again, I think that if we can convey the importance of what this concept and process can do to an organization, however small or however full or complex, that, again, it revolves around some key elements of a strategic plan, some goals. And I think what I would like to do is just dovetail further on when Philip talked about the personal responsibility. I'll just spin it slightly to talk about the distinct element that's really needed across the board in any organization when you do implement and institute performance measures is the accountability. There has to be very clear accountability at the personal level. And without that level of accountability, you can have all the performance indicators that are out there, but they ultimately revolve or have some level of engagement or involvement with your people. And without the people portion of it and without clear accountability, those numbers and the data and what we are doing well or the things that we may not be doing quite as well, or the things that we're doing poorly, more often than not revolve around the process that are people-oriented from that resource. So, and it ultimately affects the customer, those people, our stakeholders externally, that we are – the only reason we exist is for them. And that sometimes goes back to, again, what are the values of the organization? And it ultimately goes back to, Doug, your comments right from the get-go of why – what is it that we are working around? What are our strategic plans? What are our goals? What does good look like? What are those benchmarks? And, again, I'll just add the other part here for our listeners is that, you know, best practices. There's a lot of those things that are out there. What's the best practice within your region of the state from the mountains to the coastal areas and the lowlands? I mean, it just all revolves around the uniqueness of either the uniqueness or the commonalities of those geographical areas, what it is that we're trying to do based upon our resources, our capabilities, our responses, those other pieces that come in there, and then just creating that roadmap, which is part of that strategic map and that plan. So, you know, we've talked about a lot of different working parts here, but I will offer this, is that we all have some data, however substantial or however limiting. But we have something. We have numbers. We have quantifiable. We have qualifiable and quantifiable things that are there. You just need to, especially at the executive level, you're the chief officers, your commanding officers, or if it's just the chief and the company officers in a small size organization, just to sit down and start putting these thought processes together. Do a little bit of research online. I'm sure, Philip, through some of your research, you know, you can offer some suggested either the research of some of the white papers and some of the other avenues that are out there. There are some exceptional books and there's some really very good things that are available through the National Fire Academy. If I'm not mistaken, it's through the executive planning or the executive development, the programs. part of the FO programs that are there at the Academy. But there's a lot of resources to help those that are thinking about, hey, I've become somewhat excited about what this might mean for them. There's some different roadmaps to help you get to where you need to go. But clearly, I think, Philip, you know, your commentary about the stakeholders and, Doug, again, your reinforcement of the stuff from the standards side of it, whether it be from the Center of Public Safety Excellence, ISO, NFPA, those are the three key grouping areas that everything revolves around. If you can take the external stakeholders, the internal of, in terms of your department, take a look at those standards, take a look at what good is within your region as a starting point when you're just starting out, and then start putting these things together. And the other clear takeaway, too, is that don't be afraid to make those changes. Don't be afraid to change those metrics, because those metrics might become apparent that they're not telling you what you need to be, you know, what you're looking for. The numbers may not be there based upon either the lack of frequency of, because numbers have to have some basis, and if you've only got a couple of data points, they're not going to give you, there's not going to be a value there relative to what you're looking at in the big picture and scheme of things. So you've got to have the right population of data points that gets into the bin that you've established, and then within the bin you've got to clearly identify the value thresholds. What is it that we're trying to measure, and what that measurement may be of a positive nature or a negative nature. And then clearly the other takeaway out of it is you've got to identify and implement corrective actions to just, in the earliest standpoint, as part of, the leading or lagging indicators, those things that are proactive or that we are reactive. And we want to be on the proactive side versus the reactionary side. So that's my takeaway on some of these particular elements here that we've talked about on this episode.
Well, we're coming to about our time to be wrapping up. And Philip, I want to give you an opportunity to throw some final thoughts in here.
Well, folks, what I would say is, look, we have an awesome job. This is the best job in the world's best career in the world. It has done a great deal for me. And the fact that we have you listening as an audience out here just tells me y'all want to get better. I hope you've gained something out of it. It might not be anything other than I talk with a Southern accent, but at least we've had an opportunity to give some information that somebody might be able to use to make their department just a little bit better, to make their staff a little bit better. Doug and Chris, it is always an honor to work with y'all, such professional stewards of our service. And I really appreciate y'all letting me be on here with you tonight. It's been an enjoyment, and I picked up some stuff from y'all as well. So it's added to my education tonight. I can assure you that.
Chris, final thoughts.
My final thoughts is I commend both of you for, number one, I commend Philip for taking the opportunity to think about this and then reaching out, and Doug, for you to put this on the venue for this podcast. I would really encourage the chief there, for Philip, to pursue this, because I truly believe that the majority of medium to small size departments across our United States can really, number one, would value and could really utilize some good, just some basic level points and some insights that I think the chief is looking to connect some dots on. So I would encourage, Philip, I would encourage you to pursue this further and get some good information out there. And I think this is a great starting point tonight. So, Doug, thanks. I think this was just a great – it's an entirely different level of discussion here that we're talking about, that the fire chiefs of the organizations that hopefully are listening, or the company officers that are listening, bring the information back to your chiefs and just tell them, hey, have you heard about performance indicators and performance measures and benchmarking and dashboards and strategic plans, and do so in a positive manner, you know, not to ambush the guy or the gal, but do so because, again, I think there's a value. Actually, I don't think. Clearly, there's a tremendous value of what we've just talked about here in this brief episode that will make the job and the fire service better. and make the deliverables for our stakeholders, the customer that we are always talking about out there, to make our service to them better, to keep them safe and protect our property and do everything that we exist and provide service for.
Well, my final thoughts and kind of parting is that we've covered a lot of information tonight, and it's the things that we don't necessarily call sexy in the fire service, like throwing ladders or, you know, stretching lines and doing structural fire attack or some of those, but it is the foundation and the basis behind how we do our business and how we evaluate how we do our business. The second objective is, Philip, you asked for some thoughts and some helps from a good old buddy, so this was my way of giving you some additional information that you can add into that article, and I'm sure that Diane and those folks at Fire Engineering will look forward to seeing that article come in as you continue to develop it and shoot it up there. I think you've got a good basis to add in some of the conversations tonight, and I think it would be a good article that they would like to see at Fire Engineering. So that was my way of kind of hitting things. And as always, it's always a pleasure to get together and talk shop with friends and colleagues and to have the opportunity. And I definitely want to thank the folks from Fire Engineering for allowing us to have Fire and Training, Bobby Halt and the entire staff. Again, I have to plug FDIC. We're looking towards the end of April. All the dates are out. Plans are being made. We're on go going forward. I can't wait until we invade Indianapolis again and have an opportunity to share with all of our many brothers and sisters that will be there, somewhere about 35,000 plus. I'm very thankful for all the work that Fire Engineering continues to do and support us, and look forward to all the many more opportunities that are going, but especially going to FDIC. I just can't say enough about that. And that's just, I know we weren't there this year, and a lot of things have been different this year and very unprecedented with our pandemic, but hopefully moving forward, things will be changing, and we can get back to doing some of the things business-wise, education-wise, training-wise that is paramount for the success of the fire service. I want to thank you guys for coming on and our listeners for tuning in. Again, Fire and Training is dedicated to the men and women who serve on the streets 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Our job is to provide you with information, knowledge, and the ability to learn from us and some of the things that we have to share with you, so that you ultimately have the opportunity to go home to your families and have a very successful career. Till the next time we get together, I'm your host, Douglas Klein. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Fire and Training. Till then, stay safe, train often, and we'll see you again on another episode of Fire and Training.
Thanks for tuning in to Fire Engineering Talk.